Okay, mitzvah reish lamed gimel and minchas chinuch. So we finished finally the mitzvah that we were working on of lifne iver lo sitei michshol, and now we are up to the next mitzvah of lo la'avel b'mishpat. You want to look on or just listen? Okay. Great. So lo sasu aval b'mishpat. So I assume everyone had a chance to look over part of the chinuch yesterday. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we started reading. One important point to point out is the following. With the new Menchas Chinuch that we are blessed to have in our generation, so the Menchas Chinuch on the bottom, they have these comments that point you to where one should be looking in order to get a greater context of what the Chinuch is coming from and what he's trying to say. So if you look in the bottom, the Chinuch himself quotes one paragraph here, but if you look in the bottom, it tells you that it's really a direct quotation from the Rambam, which very often the Chinuch does quote from the Rambam, and it's important to actually look up that piska on the Rambam. That's why we have it on the source sheet, as we'll see in a minute. So just as a introduction to this mitzvah here about Shalola Avel Bamishpat, many of us read it yesterday, that we have to have honest court systems. We have to have batei dinim that are doing proper judgment and are not going to do the wrong type of things, not going to favor one side, not going to accept shochad, as we'll see in the next couple of mitzvahs here as well. So let's just begin with the following question. Why is it that there's no bracha that's recited on doing an honest din Torah? We know that we have brachas on many different types of mitzvahs in the Torah, and it's hard to draw the line when we should say a bracha and when we should not recite a bracha. So why is it that over here, when one goes ahead and does a din Torah, why did the Dayanim not make a bracha before they begin? Yeah. Okay, good. So let's see. First of all, I just want to give two possible explanations that are given by the Rishonim to explain why there is no bracha recited on making a proper din Torah. So explanation number one is the Rajba in the Tshuva. So let's read this along. Number one on the source sheet, the Rajba writes as follows. Sha'alta. So the Rashba is responding to somebody who sent him the following shayla. Lama'im mevarchan al mitzvah kula. Why is it that we don't have a specific bracha on every single mitzvah that one does in his life? How come some mitzvahs have brachas and some mitzvahs do not have brachas? So says the Rashba as follows. Zu she'ela amuka. This is a very deep question. And in fact, we find that it's not so easy to understand why certain mitzvahs have brachas and why certain ones do not. Many of the Rishonim have a difficult time explaining why there are not brachas on certain mitzvahs. So says the Rashba. So the Rashba says, he says there's not one principle, there's not really one rule to explain why we do or do not recite brachas. So he says the following. Number one, any mitzvah that does not involve a specific maisa, any mitzvah that does not involve a specific activity or action while doing that mitzvah, for example, before Shemitah, we know that we all write a prizbal before Shemitah. Why? Because, anybody know? What's the minig? I think next year is Shemitah, is that correct? Is that right? Next year is Shemitah. So before next Rosh Hashanah, we're going to write a prizbal. Now, why do we write a prizbal? Anybody, yeah.
So loans can continue on.
So what would have been without the prizbal? What would we have done without the prizbal? What's the ikar din Torah? Shvius cancels all the loans. Shvius tells me that I'm no longer allowed to collect the money that I lent to someone. So the Rashba says the reason we don't recite a bracha there is because that's not something that I do actively. Hashmat Hiskavim is just that the money by itself is not owed any longer. V'chein eimavachna mitzvah she'en tluya kula b'yad ha'oseh. Says the Rashba also that one would not recite a bracha if the mitzvah is not totally dependent on me who is doing it. So for example, he says, Mipnei she'efshe shelo yisratze b'chavero, v'nim tzema'isa b'spatel. He says, since sometimes a person will try to do his end of the deal, his part of the mitzvah, but it won't be finished off because the other component to the mitzvah will not be followed through. So he says, for example, k'gon matnas aniyim, havas hadalim, v'nasinas hatzdaka. And with this, the Rashba explains why we don't recite a bracha on a din Torah, because imagine the following scenario. We have three dayanim judging a din Torah, and we make a psak, and now the parties don't follow it. Or one of them is mochel the other one, and no one ends up having to pay. or for whatever reason it is, the whole din Torah becomes batal mevutal. So if that would be the case, then our bracha turns out to be a bracha of atala, because we judged this disagreement. We judged this this disagreement between the two people in our way of thinking, and it turns out that really it wasn't followed through as the din Torah actually finished. So that's why the Rashba suggests why we would not recite a bracha. So one other, yeah.
What about just in general, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro? Is there a bracha on that?
Is there a bracha on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro? For example, let's say... Saying, do we recite brachas on regular mitzvahs Shem Bein Adam L'Chaveiro?
And then, for the moment, this may be Bein Adam L'Chaveiro.
Would this be considered Bein Adam L'Chaveiro to judge a din Torah? I am not quite sure. Any ideas? Any suggestions? Should this be Bein Adam L'Chaveiro? What? So you're saying then it is Bein Adam L'Makom, it's not really Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Right, is that what you're suggesting? Any other steps?
Well, no, I would say, I mean, it is true you have a responsibility because it's decreed, but I'm saying it's because, like, to avoid tyranny and to avoid,
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll have to think about that. Would a person make brachas on mitzvahs Bein Adam L'Chaveiro? It seems from the Rashba that one would. For example, giving tzedakah. So the Rashba says, if not for the fact that the Ani has the right to walk away and say, I don't want to accept it, we would recite a bracha. Even though that's Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, we would assume that a bracha would be recited. I have to think about other examples, whether or not this would follow through. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll talk about it at a later date. But one other suggestion that I wanted to present about why there's no bracha on a din Torah would be the following. There are those who talk about why there's no bracha on certain types of mitzvahs. For example, a person makes a makkah. So there's a big discussion. When one makes a makkah on his roof, does he recite a bracha? Does he not recite a bracha? If, in fact, he's being mekayim a mitzvah d'oraisa of l'sasim damim b'beisecha, one is not allowed to have a dangerous type of situation in his house. So by putting up a makkah, he's saving himself from a disaster. So why don't we recite a bracha when we put up a makkah? So the Rambam, in fact, writes that you do recite a bracha, but many Rishonim say you don't. So the question is, why? So some say because you don't make a bracha on something which is only mipnei hasakana. When we're only doing something to save ourselves from a disaster from happening later, so we don't recite a bracha, which gets into a whole discussion we had once before about mayim achronim. The Rishonim have a discussion whether or not we should recite a bracha on mayim achronim. So some say that since mayim achronim is only a mipnei hasakana consideration, so we would not recite a bracha. However, there are those who say the following, that the reason we don't recite a bracha on making a makkah is because this is something that also a non-Jew is responsible in taking care of. For example, you have a non-Jew who has some sort of dangerous type of setup in his house. He has a flight of stairs without a banister. So he also has a mitzvah. He also has a very clear directive that he must make sure that no tragedy happens in his home because of some irresponsibility that he, in his building of his house. So since the Rishonim say that since we have mitzvahs that are both applicable for Jews and for non-Jews, so there's no way that I can honestly say in my bracha, v'tzivanu, asher k'dishanu mitzvot v'tzivanu, you're going to say, because I'm a Jew, I have this mitzvah? That's not true, because if I was a non-Jew, I would also have this mitzvah. So therefore, some of the Rishonim say that's why a bracha would not be recited by a building of a makkah, for example. So carry that over here. That would seemingly apply to our case as well. As we know, one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach is also to have honest Dine Torah, to have honest, obviously they don't have to follow all the laws of, obviously they don't have to follow all the rules of Chashem Mishpat, but they do have to follow some sort of just court system. So since that would be the case, that Jews and non-Jews alike have to have honest court systems, so therefore we would assume that one cannot say a bracha v'tzivanu, because that's not specifically made for Jews, that's something that non-Jews must do as well. So with that background in mind, maybe we should begin to read the chinuch aloud. Who would like to volunteer to read the first paragraph? Anybody who's still following? Yes. Any takers? You have your menchas chinuch? No? Okay, you can look on here if you want. Anybody would like to read the first paragraph? Anybody? Okay, there we go, Shai.
Hadayan.
So there's a difference between a din and a dayan. Right. Okay. Right, so what? So let's just stop for a minute. Let's figure out, how do we know when it's going to be dayan and when it's going to be a din? How do you know when you're going to read it dayan and when you're going to read it din? What? Right, so the extra yud tells us that the word really means dayan. And when you have just one yud, so that's dal yud nun, means din.
I thought you were saying before.
Oh, that's good. Okay, let's continue.
Elo im kein asa b'ratzon ba'le ha-din. Ve'alzeh nemar lo sasu ogo b'mishpah.
Okay, so let's paraphrase. What does he say?
He says that we don't, that you can't do, you know, misjudgment while in court. And at all times, you cannot pass over, I guess, the Torah decree of us in this case.
Right. So basically, you have to follow the rules of the Torah and don't favor one side and make sure you judge honestly. So that's pretty much very good. That's pretty much what the Chinuch is telling us over here. Now, if you look at the next line in the Chinuch, there's a very interesting lashon that he uses. And in every single mitzvah, you flip to any mitzvah here, you'll find that, look, turn to any page you want. So if you look at the beginning of any given mitzvah, so this first one paragraph where the Chinuch tells us what he's going to discuss, what type of mitzvah, then the very next line, he always says, Shoresh mitzvah zu. He always says the Shoresh, the roots of this specific mitzvah are the following. So in this mitzvah, he writes, Shoresh mitzvah yadua. The roots of this mitzvah are known. What is the root of this mitzvah? Ki b'mishpat tzedek yiskayim yishuv b'nei adam. If we have a corrupt society where there's no judicial system that's really honest, so then we can't really have a society that's going to run properly. So therefore, he says, the shorish mitzvah zu is to have a society that runs properly. So let's read on the source sheet number 2, my father quotes from Soloveitchik, that it's a strange terminology that is used as the choice phrase by the Chinuch. Let's see, you want to read this paragraph here of 2 on the source sheet. Everyone have it? So number 2, why do we use this choice phrase of mishrashe ha-mitzvah? Where does that come from? So let's hear.
So why does he specifically choose this lashon? So why doesn't he say from the reason of the mitzvah?
Right.
So the reason, if you say the
if
word,
he would have just said. What?
Tom
mitzvah zu. So then we would say, what does he mean?
That HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevented us to be commanded on this mitzvah.
Right.
V'hu ha-motivatsia v'ze lo nitan lehe'amer klape HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that we would say that this is the motivation. If this thing doesn't apply, then we don't have to do the mitzvah.
Right, but how could you say such a thing? Hashem has motivations why he tells us to do certain things. Hashem is above and beyond that. Okay, so what does it mean when he says mishrashe ha-mitzvah?
So the fichach bachar baal sefer chinuch b'lashon sharshe mitzvah dehainu ezu inyan o ezu meida tzarich sricha mitzvah lehashrish banu. So what is it supposed to ingrain into us?
Right. So that's a very interesting point that Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, and we should keep in mind every time we're learning different mitzvahs in the sefer chinuch. Why is it that the chinuch chooses to use the phrase of mishrashe hamitzvah instead of mitaimeh hamitzvah? So again, anyone want to repeat why that is the case? Why do we use the choice phrase of Mishrashe HaMitzvah instead of Mitaimeh HaMitzvah? Yeah?
Because Tameh HaMitzvah has an implication of motivation which isn't really applicable to Hashem.
Right. And Mishrashe HaMitzvah
doesn't have that implication.
And what does it mean?
It's more of like the Inyan HaMitzvah, what's like the, you know, the, I guess the ethical and moral code that relates to Mitzvah.
Right, so how is it supposed to impact us, as opposed to why Hashem gave us this mitzvah? It's more, how is this mitzvah supposed to affect our lives? Fine, so now, let's go ahead and get into the nitty-gritty halachos of this din of Lasasu Aval Bamishpat. So just by way of introduction, the Chinuch in the next paragraph will tell us, it's almost verbatim from the Rambam. And if you look, let's just, we're going to learn how to navigate the page here a little bit. So if you look at the little letter Beis in the next paragraph, you see? little letter bays in the new Menchas Chinuch? Everybody have that? So if you look in the next paragraph, it starts off Midini HaMitzvah. So in the middle of the first line, there's a little letter bays, which brings us to the footnotes on the bottom, but not the bottom footnotes, just the middle footnotes. So over there it says, some correction in the Dfus, or whatever, some have a different Nusach. But if you look there, before all those footnotes begin, so he tells us, the Mr. Footnote, I don't know who he is here, but the footnotes tell us exactly where we should be looking to learn the background of these halachas in the Chinuch. So if you look there, the first place he points to is the Rambam is, I'm sorry, in Parshas Kedoshim, that's number one. Then he says the Rambam lo sasei reisha in Gimel. And then he writes that the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin Perek Chav. So it became a very easy job to really break apart a Chinuch because now we have everything done for us. They tell us exactly where we should look. So we look in the Rambam Perek Chav in Hilchos Sanhedrin, which is on the source sheet. And that's number three. So we have to look at that in order to understand what the Chinuch is actually coming to teach us here, because this is a direct quotation from the Rambam himself. Yeah.
Is there a difference in, I think sometimes the Sefer Chinuch says Mishor Shere Mitzvah and sometimes says Shorich Mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference in that?
I haven't learned enough Chinuchs in my life to understand what the difference is.
Right.
But I have to imagine that there's some reason why it's different. Either it's grammatical or it's...
Okay.
It could be there's a deeper meaning. I'm not sure. Right. Interesting point, though. So let's look at the Rambam. Anybody would like to read number three on the source sheet? Is the Rambam in Perek Chaf of Hilchos Sanhedrin? Let's hear from the back. Anybody in the back? Yeah, okay. Me'aves. Okay, so that's halacha number one that the Rambam learns out from this pasuk of Losasu Avav Mishpat is. Now what? What's this line? The first thing that the Rambam learns out from this mitzvah is you're not allowed to be ma'aves hasadin, you're not allowed to corrupt the justice. A person has to make sure that he is mechayiv the right person and he's mezakeh the right person. And then the Rambam continues, yeah? Okay, so what does that second line mean? It means the Rambam seems to be learning here that there are two different Isurim that we learn out from this pasuk. What are the two Isurim?
Judgment.
What was that? Anyone who?
Removes.
What, you're translating ma'ana?
Yeah.
So ma'ana does not mean remove. Ma'ana means, anybody know? Inoy hadin. Anyone ever heard of the concept of inoy hadin?
You make it like bad for them. Like you,
you worsen it. So what does that mean? How do you worsen a din Torah? One person loses. What could be worse than that?
Make him sad.
So obviously the person who loses is going to be sad. How can I possibly make a din Torah worse than actually losing the case?
Wasting his time.
Giving a bad judgment.
Giving a bad judgment means that's the first issue that the Rambam learned. But what's the second thing that the Rambam's coming to add here? What does that mean to make a person feel terrible about the din Torah? What does that mean? So what were you saying?
So if you waste his time, meaning if the psak is known, then you have to say what the psak is immediately. Waste time.
Very good. So that's exactly what the Rambam says here. Inei hadin means you're not allowed to waste the person's time. Once the dayanim know what the psak din actually is, so now there's an isser of inei hadin, there's an isser to make the person wait. So we're going to break apart these two halachas that the Rambam quotes here from this pasuk of shalola abeses hadin, and we're going to see what the ramifications of each part of this halacha actually are. So let's see number one. The Rambam over here learns out from the pasuk of Ma'avis HaSadin. Just want to point this out before we go further, and it's something you should write down. The Rambam over here says that we learn out from this pasuk of Losasu Avav Bamishpat. You see from here, you're not allowed to be Ma'ane HaSadin. You're not allowed to make a person wait. Once the judge, as he said, once the judge knows that the din is in one person's favor or in one person's not such good favor, so he has to tell him right away. He can't make him wait and suffer any longer than he should. So it's interesting to point out that Rashi on this week's Parsha, in Parsha's Mishpatim, writes that he learns this out from a different place. And we'll see in a few minutes why this is very important. This machlokas, the Rambam and the Rashi, is going to become a very important discussion. Rashi learns out, how do we know that you're not allowed to be ma'ane es hadin? How do we know inu hadin is usur? How do I know I'm not allowed to make someone suffer more than they have to? Says Rashi, because it says in this week's parsha, almana lo sa'anu. It says you're not allowed to make an almana suffer. So Rashi says, that doesn't just mean an almana, that means anybody. That means you're never allowed to make anybody suffer more than they should have suffered without you. And therefore Rashi learns out from here, mikan, one is not allowed to do inui hadin. One is not allowed to make a person wait longer than he has to hear the psak din. So this is a very important machlokas, Rashi and the Rambam. In a few minutes we'll get back to this machlokas and we'll talk about why either one of them would come up halacha l'maisa and where it would have very far-reaching ramifications l'halacha. But let's first start with the Rambam's first chiddush l'halacha that he quotes here. The first chiddush that the Rambam has is that one is not allowed to pervert a justice. One is not allowed to say in the favor of the party that he knows is actually wrong. Correct? That was the first line that we read in the Rambam. So now, let's see the following. First of all, just by way of introduction to that din, the Shach writes in Yerodei and Klali Isser Veheter. The Shach writes that this doesn't only apply in Dinei Mamonos. This doesn't only apply to this situation where you're in a din Torah. The Shach writes that if a person comes to me for a psak, I'm the rabbi, a person comes and he asks me, is this pot kosher? Or this milk fell into this pot, is it kosher or not? Or whatever. Anyone has a shayla, nochas nida, whatever it is, someone has a shayla. If the rabbi decides he's going to be machmir in a place where really he was supposed to be mekel, or the opposite, he's mekel in a case where he should have been machmir, says the shach, that is a part of this prohibition of shalola avala samishpat. Meaning, not only does this apply when you have two people fighting and they're trying to figure out who's chayiv and who's pater, it also applies when someone comes to me and asks, what is the halacha in this specific case? If I say, well, you know, he needs a little more yir shemayim in his life, you know, let's be machmir on him, says the shach, that is absolutely forbidden, that is part of this violation of losasu ala bamishpa. Not only that, the shach writes, we do have cases where the halacha is not clear. We have cases where it's a sveka d'dina, right? Sometimes we're not sure. So we say, okay, be machmir because you're not sure. Says the shach, if a rabbi tells his balabas, oh yeah, we have to go l'chumra, but he makes it sound like that's the din, he doesn't tell him that the reason I'm saying to go l'chumra is because I'm not exactly sure what the halacha is, says the shach, that also would be a prohibition of losasu avava mishpat. A person has to make sure to always say the absolute truth and not pervert any type of justice, whether it comes to a din Torah or it comes to any shayla nisr v'hetter. Yeah.
Then the person might not want to do it. I'm saying you're saying we should be machmir because it's suffik. And someone be like, oh, well, if it's suffik, uh-huh. Then...
So you're saying the rabbi is doing it with good intention.
Right. So if once it's a suffik, why not, and we're being machmir, why not just pretend that that's... We're actually being
so that's what the shach says. You have to be honest and you have to say exactly
why
you're giving this psak. Yeah, no, you're raising a very good point. Meaning,
he
says over here, where I'm going to sell it, the shach doesn't say you always have to say the reasons. Sometimes it's worse to say the reasons because the balabas is going to think he's going to get his way out of the reasons that you gave. But the shach says if the only reason you're being machmir here is because you're not sure what the din is or it's a sveka d'dina and Chazal weren't sure, the Shulchan Aruch wasn't sure what the din was. So in such a case, the Shach says you have to be intellectually honest and actually tell the Balabas that the reason why you're being machmir is because it's a suffik. You can't sell it as a real isser. Yeah.
How does the Shach fit into the Rambam? The Rambam says that as long as you don't cause them to cause suffering, it's fine.
So that's a great question, but it would seem that there are two different segments of the Rambam. Right, as we said, there are two different halachas that the Rambam is learning out from this one pasuk. Segment number one is you have to be honest in everything you do. Segment number two of the Rambam is that you're not allowed to make a person suffer more than he has to. So it seems to be two different halachas, and we'll get to the second halacha in a few minutes. Yeah. Okay, so let's look into this din of Shalola Abis as Hadin. A fascinating shaila comes up, and the question basically is the following. Do the ends justify the means when it comes to a din Torah? Now, what does that mean? So there's a fascinating tshuva. I see we're running out of time, so there's a fascinating tshuva. We'll say it outside from the Kloizemerger Rebbe. Kloizemerger Rebbe had the following suffix. Imagine you are a dayan on a din Torah. Okay? So we go through this whole din Torah, and now it comes out that you think that Shai Shefter is chayiv to pay $50,000 to Rabbi Cohen. Okay? I did something terrible. I'm chayiv to pay $50,000. You know that I'm a bum. And there's no way if I get that signed sock that says $50,000, there's not a chance I'm ever going to pay it. What am I going to do? I'll go spread stories about you. You crooked dying, the guy took shochad from Rabbi Cohen. Don't ask what this guy was doing. I'm never going to pay this. I'll do everything to make sure I don't have to pay. So what do? You're a smart guy. So what do? You decide, instead of writing the psak that I should pay $50,000 to Rabbi Cohen, and Rabbi Cohen will get nothing, so the Klezmer Rebbe has a suffix. Maybe you as the dayan have a right to write on the psak that I'm chayv to pay $30,000. $30,000 I think is a more reasonable number. So maybe you should be a smart person, a smart dayan, and you should write that I'm chayv to pay $30,000, and this way Rabbi Cohen will at least get $30,000. If you write $50,000, I'm not going to pay anything. If you write $30,000, at least he'll get $30,000 of his money. So is a dayan allowed to do that or not? Is a dayan allowed to lie in a psak because he's trying to get the person who's owed the money some of the money that he deserves, where otherwise he would get nothing? So what do you say?
So based on the shorash of the mitzvah, I would say no, because the whole point is tzidkos and yashros. Even right, we shouldn't really sacrifice our ethical principles just to get a specific result.
So you're saying the ends do not justify the means. That's what I would have said, right? That is the simple understanding from reading the Chinuch. I would say you got to be honest. Doesn't make a difference how many good ideas you have and how many good reasons you have. You have to be honest. Yeah.
But then you could also make the argument that in court, more than any other time, the ends is all that matters. Because all I care about is my money. So Rick Cohen would be happy with the $30,000 as opposed to zero.
Right, so this is precisely the suffix that the Klezmer Rebbe had. Are you, as a smart, brilliant dying, are you allowed to lie on the psak and get Rabbi Cohen some of his money? Yeah.
I mean, besides the fact that maybe the ends don't justify the means, but you know, the thing is, I don't want to get $0 or $30,000. I want to get $50,000. You have to do everything you can.
Meaning you as Rabbi Cohen.
Right, saying, so maybe you're saying, so like, as a dying, maybe even if the ends justify the means, maybe you want to do everything possible to ensure that he gets the full amount. And if someone else comes along and beats a bum and doesn't give it, well, now that there's a problem in the next step in the process, and we should try to force him to pay. But I'm not going to go try to mess him up.
Right.
Even if the end justify the means, I don't think I would go do that. He wants the full $50,000.
Right.
You should try to do everything you can to get him the full $50,000.
So the simple understanding is you're 100% right. You have to do what you have to do, and whatever happens, however the cards fall, they'll fall. But the ends do not justify the means.
But even if the ends justify the means, I'm saying, I don't think anybody wants to.
You're saying he's still not right. He still deserves $50,000.
You should try to give him the full $50,000. If someone else comes and does a problem, then you should try to make sure that they pay up.
Meaning you should run after me.
Right. Don't go mess him up in the ideal sense.
Okay, good. Good, yeah.
We've all been assuming that the whole goal is to be like honest and make sure Rick Cohen gets $50,000. But really, I think maybe the mitzvah's on the dayanim, that they just have to give the right psak.
Very good.
They just have to say $50,000, whatever happens.
Very good. That's what I would say. From reading the Chinuch, I would say the mitzvah's on the dayan to give an honest psak. However, if you look in the Choshen Mishpat, in the Pischei Tshuva on the bottom of the page, he quotes a very strange machlokas. In Choshen Mishpat, we find the following case. Let's say I have three dayanim. Okay? Take, for example, we are the Bezdin. Is that okay? Okay? You're okay being a dayan with me?
Sure.
Fine. So we're all three of us are the Bezdin. What happens? We have the following case. Two of us are crooked dayanim, and we took money from one of the people who's being charged, and this dayan is the only honest one in the room. So what happens? Achi Rav Nahatos tells us that when two people think this is the psak, the third person has to come along. He has to sign on, correct? So what happens? He sees that we were crooked the whole way through. We did nothing honest. We accepted shochad. We were lying, cheating the whole way through. Now it comes time to sign the psak. So what's he going to do? He's going to sign his name on this made-up sheker, and he's going to be mechayev someone to pay money based on this whole crooked judicial system? It can't be. So he says, you know what? Instead of signing on, what am I going to do? I'll say eni yodea. He's going to cast his vote. This third dayan is going to cast his vote and say, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what the halacha should be. Now, what's the din when someone says eni yodea? So the Gemara tells us,
Mosifin,
you bring in another two dayanim. So great idea. Does he have a right to lie and say eni yodea? He knows good and well what the halacha is. But does he have a right to say eni yodea in order that he shouldn't be outvoted by the other two, and in order that we'll bring up two more dayanim from the bench to outvote the two crooked dayanim that were trying to lie? So that is a big machlokes in Choshen Mishpat. Do they have a right? Does a dayan have a right to lie in order that he should save the party who's going to be chayiv for no good reason, does he have a right to lie and say any yodea or not? Let's take this to another case, a third case, where we find another machlokas. The Rechaim HaKadosh in this week's parsha has a machlokas with the Rabbi Yonos Neveshitz and the Yaros Devash. What if you have a case? You have 23 people on a din Torah. And the halacha is, if all 23 are judging a case of dinei nefashos, we're trying to figure out whether someone deserves a death penalty or not. So you have all 23 dayanim deciding whether or not we're going to kill this person. So the halacha is, if all 23 people say chayiv, what's the din? Potter. This murderer. All 23 of us think the murderer is chayiv, he committed the murder. So what's the halacha? He goes out free. Why? So the Gemara tells us, it seems clear from the Rishonim, from the way the Gemara sets it up, is that if you couldn't figure out how to find even one tzad that maybe it wasn't him, maybe he's not really chayiv, then you obviously didn't look into the case carefully enough, and the guy walks out scot-free. So here, you have 23 people sitting around. Each one casts his vote. So you have 22 put in chayiv. Now you're up to the 23rd guy. I'm number 23. Okay? So now I'm faced with the following dilemma. If I put in chayiv into the box, what's going to happen? The guy's going to walk away. A murderer is going to walk away free. So what should I do? Maybe I should put Potter into the box. And then?
He's going to be
chayiv. I'll kill the murderer.
Do you see the votes before you?
So do you see the votes before you is a great question. I would have thought it's a closed ballot, no? So it seems that the Gemara says, no, the Gemara tells us that you maschilim in akatam. Right, so it seems, whatever, from that Gemara, it seems that everyone does know what everybody else's votes are.
So at that point, the guy's hoping, like, oh, please vote, I die.
Exactly, right. But here, I'm number 23, I'm faced with this dilemma. If I cast my vote for Chayiv, what's going to happen? The guy's going to walk away free.
It's like shooting from the moon.
Right, so what am I supposed to do? What should I do? So this is a big machlokes of Chaim HaKadosh and Rabbi Yonos Neveshitz. What should a dayan do in that type of case? He's stuck, he's not sure what the halacha, he's not sure what he's supposed to do. Should he say the honest halacha that he thinks it is? Or should he say pater in order to make the guy chayiv? Same type of scenario. So here we have three cases. Again, we have the case where I was chayiv to pay Rabbi Cohen $50,000. The dayan knows that I'm a bum and I'm never going to pay it. So maybe you should be smart and write $30,000 on the psak in order to save Rabbi Cohen some of his money. That's case number one. Case number two is that we had the case where we have three dayanim. One of them is straight. Two of them are crooked. Should the third dayan say any yodea? Should he lie and say any yodea in order that we should bring up two more dayanim from the bench and go through the whole din Torah again? That's question number two. And dilemma number three is, when I have 23 dayanim, 22 already cast their vote chayiv, one of them is the last one left and he's not sure what to say, does he have a right to say pater in order that the person should actually be chayiv? Yeah.
So I have a question on the last case.
So let's just hold on to that for a minute. Let me just get to one last point on this here, and then we'll get to your questions. So let's just point out one beautiful idea from this week's Parsha, where we find the following. Look in number 5 on the sources. I see we won't get through everything. Maybe we'll do some more next week. Maybe. Parshas Mishpatim. If you look at number 5, we have the following pasuk. Everybody turn to number 5. It's on the other side. Everybody have it? Number 5 is going to answer all three of these dilemmas. Number 5 tells us, Midrash Sheker Tirchak says, don't tell a lie. So why didn't the pasuk stop there? Don't tell a lie. What is the end of the pasuk? V'naki v'tzadik al tarog, ki lo atzdik rasha. Well, what's going on here? Why doesn't the Torah just say, do not tell a lie? So the Pardes Yosef quotes the following verse. He says, Ma'a kesher ben chalkei ha-pasuk. What's going on here? Why are all these different factions of the pasuk all put together in one pasuk? Says the Pardes Yosef, B'shem some of the darshanim as follows. Picture the following scenario. I have 23 dayanim in a room, and 22 of them have already said chayiv. Now we're up to the 23rd person. So this 23rd person, as we said, is stuck in a dilemma. What's he supposed to do? So says the Pardes Yosef, I'm not stam going to lie. Midrash Sheker Tirchak. Wait a minute, we all know we're not allowed to say a lie. I'm lying for a good reason. I'm lying because Naki Tzadik Al Tarog. I'm lying because if I come in and I say Potter, I'm sorry, if I come in and I say chayiv, then the guy's going to walk away free. That's why I'm lying.
That would take away the point of it. The point is that if everyone thinks that he's chayav to die, then he shouldn't be. And if you go the opposite, then you're taking away the point of everyone thinking he's
very good. So you're saying a dying should be honest. Because the point of the Gemara is that if everyone says chayav, obviously there's a reason that we all said it. We did something wrong. So you're right. So the reason I'm lying over here, Midrash Sheker Tirchak, the pasuk says, don't lie. Why shouldn't you lie? Because Naki v'tzadik al tarog. the rationale for my lying is because I don't want to have this guy running around. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, no. Everybody has to do what they have to do. The Dayan should be honest. The Dayan should do what he's supposed to say. He has to be honest. He's not allowed to say any Yodeya if he really knows the Halacha. I, the 23rd person, I'm not allowed to put the putter in the ballot. Correct? In all these cases, a person has to be honest, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us at the end of the Pasuk, Kilo Atzdik Rasha. I'll take care of him. I'll make sure the other end of the deal is followed through. I'll make sure, even though he came out of Beis Din, and all 23 of you said he's chayiv, and therefore he walked out scot-free, I'll make sure, in the end of the day, he's taken care of. I'll take care of the Rasha. Lo Atzdik Rasha, in the end of the day, he will get the onus that he deserves, but the Dayanim's job is to be honest. That's a simple reading of the Chinuch, of the Rambam. A Dayan has to be honest. The Shrashi HaMitzvah, like David pointed out, the Shrashi HaMitzvah over here are that we need to have a just society. Otherwise, our whole society is going to collapse. So that's some of the ethical dilemmas that come up in the different Shalos HaTshuvos and in the Poskim about this halacha in our specific mitzvah here. Yeah?
I was actually going to say it again.
That you're... The whole point of the din.
Is if the person thinks he's chayav, he is potter.
Right. Exactly. Very good. Yeah.
Also, what about that last point where you said about just society? Mm-hmm. You make the argument that a just society means that the just thing will happen at the end. Mm-hmm. So therefore, maybe you guys should lie. Because, not that you have to... In other words, I guess the opposite of the ends justify the means. I mean, the ends justify the means.
Like, yeah, what?
That this guy should lie, so we have a just society that the right thing happens. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm not going through that in an honest way. Mm-hmm. The just thing is happening.
Well, according to the way we explain why Shrashi HaMitzvah, why that word was chosen, it's because it's supposed to put inside of us an honest feeling. It's supposed to put inside of us
I'm going for the honest.
In a greater society, right. You're saying. Okay, what to think about. But this is just a little bit. Maybe we'll continue sometime next week. Everyone should have a wonderful day and a wonderful Shabbos. Yes. Any other questions?